listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
All right, welcome on in. It is the Forza Podcast. I know it's been a week. It's been a while. Again, it is your co-host, Marsh Thomas. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how are we?
I'm doing good. How are you, Marsh?
Pretty good, and we're about to be even better because we got a special guest. We got Roman Kane coming on today, so let's get him on the phone.
All right, give me just one moment. Ro, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Hi, Ro!
What's up, bro?
Nothing much, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. You know how we got to do it, State of the U. Of course I got to come on for Marshall.
Yay, yay, yay. All right. So we now welcome on Roman Kane. You know him. I know him. He is the voice of Kane's offense, and he's from the Orange Bowl Boys and State of the U. Again, thank you so much, Ro, for coming on. So we just wanted to bring you on and pick your brain a little bit about Rhett Lashley and the Miami Hurricanes. How does that sound, man?
It sounds amazing. Let's go.
All right, let's get into it. Well, so first off, Ro, you know, you have said numerous times that Rhett Lashley was your number one choice for the Miami Hurricanes offensive coordinator job after Danny Enos left. Can you, you know, give us a little bit of reason why you wanted him so badly?
I think because simply Miami, the University of Miami, the Hurricanes have mastered doing less with more, right? If you just look at the ineptitude we've put on that side of the ball, it's been a long time since we've been a top 25 offense, no matter who the offensive coordinator was. So the complete reversal of fortune of that would be somebody who did more with less. And then that's where I really, you know, got, you know, introduced to Rhett Lashley over there at SMU. I watched several of their games. I'm a big fan of offense. I'm not shy about that. That's where, you know, I rest my cap on that side of the ball. And I was just so impressed how he could take SMU talent. Now, this is a team that's like literally hasn't had a four-star in the last 5 years since prior to him being there and him being there. And he was able to, you know, just reel off this top 25 offense, top 10 offense, and just put up monster numbers. So that's why I was turned on to it. And I've always said, like, if I ran an up-tempo offense, what would it be? And I was like, it would still use multiple formations and be multiple and multiplicative based. And that's exactly what Rhett Lashley brings to the table. So I'm really, really excited simply because Rhett Lashley mastered doing less with more. And that's what Miami needs down here.
Okay. And so do you think – And going off of that and looking towards the kind of offense that he'll be running at Miami, do you think that we'll see more of an air raid look like he gave, like he ran at SMU with Sonny Dykes? Or do you think we'll see more of a power spread like he ran at Auburn? What do you think we're going to see the most with him and Coral Gables?
Depending on who the quarterback is, and I'm pretty much, you know, landlocked to the fact that it's going to be De'Aaron King, I think you're going to see more veer options. I think you're going to see more quarterback veer, that zone read, that zone quarterback keep capability, and a lot more design quarterback runs this year than he had with Shane Bouchel last year. Bouchel wasn't that much of a mobile threat guy. So there were some air raid components, a lot of numbers friendlies, RPO, post and pre-snap. But when you look at the De'Aaron King's game, I think you'd be remiss and foolish not to add some of that Auburn capability back into the offense. So I think you're going to find it somewhere in the middle. He's 1 year removed from that Sonny Dykes system. I don't think he's completely going to ignore that, but I know he's going to use the weapon of De'Aaron King a lot more in the run capacity than he did with Shane Bouchel last year.
Perfect. Well, so we talk about the wide receivers quite a bit on here. Particularly me, I'm pretty afraid of what we got to work with next season. But I wanted to pick your brain, Ro. Is there a particular wide receiver based on skill set, ability, measurables, anything that you think has the biggest chance to thrive or the biggest opportunity to make a huge impact next season?
I do, and this system is going to really unshackle the beast, if you will. I mean, last year's system and Rick before that, I think Rick's system was really predicated on the fact that It was a similar amount of plays. It was simple systems. I really think that the defenses started to catch on to it. And then last year with the long developing pass plays, the fact it was a West Coast derivative, it took a long time. A lot of the times, listen, when you're 127th out of 130th in sacks allowed, guess what? Your wide receivers, they're not getting the ball. Mm-hmm. And that's something with Rhett Lashley that I'll parlay that to. He was, I mean, their sacks were remarkably low than what the University of Miami. It was 34 less sacks than what Miami gave up a year ago. So that's 34 maybe possible passing attempts that go in favor of the wide receivers who can excel. So that's like a little nuance there. But as far as, you know, I'm going to default this because we just had a really candid interview with Jimmy Murphy on the Orange Bowl boys. And I'll tell you, I defaulted the same question you asked me to him. And he swore up and down that Jeremiah Payton was going to be that dude. He's going to be that guy. And it really gave me hope as a Canes fan. I was like, to hear him, really, that's a guy that's been in the locker room on that offensive side of the ball. I know he was a special team star for us, but in that terms, just to hear him just praise him that much, he was really quick on the trigger. And I do think Pope is another, like my personal pick. I've seen how hard recently he's working. And this is the style of offense, because I think with Pope, you heard sometimes maybe playbook issues, but you've heard Rhett Lashley come out, and I've watched this offense. It's not that difficult to digest, right? When you go at tempo, you're gonna go with a couple core values and bases. You're gonna work on some plays during the week, but it's about going fast. It's about being crisp at what you're trying to do. And I really think somebody like Pope, who can have a simplified system, you put him in space, I think he's going to eat in this system. So if you ask me my two to click, and I'll tag team that with Jimmy Murphy, because I just spoke with him, I think it's going to be Jeremiah Payton and Mark Pope.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then going back to the quarterback position, Ro, because everyone knows you as the QB Whisperer and De'Arik King. What do you like most about De'Arik King as a quarterback, and what do you think he brings to the Miami Hurricanes that maybe other quarterbacks that we haven't possessed in the past few years?
He's a Ferrari with feet. He literally is that. I mean, he is fast. And when I look at quarterbacks and I break quarterbacks, and this is what to answer your question, Marsh, here's the big thing. What does he bring different to the room? You know, when I look at quarterbacks, I say, are they zone read threat or are they zone read capable? What that means, if the quarterback pulls the ball in the zone read, is he going to be capable? Can he pick up a first down? Can he keep teams honest? We got guys like that. I think Tate Martell's that way. I think Nikosi Perry's that way. But then you have that zone read threat, right? That guy that's going to pull the ball, and the defensive coordinators don't want him to, because he's a threat to take it all the way. I've seen this guy literally on film. Everything's covered. And he literally will just reel off a 30, 35-yard run like it's nothing. And there's nothing the defense can do about it, because you have to pick your poison. So when you have an elite runner, like De'Arik King's an elite runner. He's not just a runner. He can run from that position. And with this style of offense, he's going to be efficient. I like his deep ball. I saw a lot of nice deep ball touch. You know, some things in the intermediate area, sometimes he could be a little off-guided. I think that area can improve, and we'll see how he does this year. Maybe some accuracy on some balls here and there, but it's just offset to the degree that, hey, you're going to miss some balls sometimes. I'm not going to hold that against him. I'm not going to put that hard pressed against him. But when you have Lincoln Riley come out publicly and say, I don't know if I can count on one hand five dudes, and that may be too many about De'Arik King's capability. Like, you know, that man knows quarterbacks, and when he has the superlatives and high praise, you got to listen. So I listened. I see what he saw, and Miami fans should be very excited about De'Arik King.
Yeah, that sounded like a recruiting pitch from Lincoln Riley to me. And you know, if Riley wants him on Oklahoma, then we should be pretty freaking happy to have him.
Absolutely. And you know, my thing was, if he would have did that for the second year, then I would have been like, you know what? Then Spencer Rattler, let's make a recruiting pitch.
Yeah, right.
I think Spencer Rattler is going to be that dude too. He's fine. He's got a quarterback in the stables. We'll take De'Arik King for this year, and you can ride with Spencer Rattler this year if you need to. I don't think he's going to prove him wrong.
Yeah. So building off that, what you said about the, you know, the read option and keeping honest as opposed to being a threat, do you have any concern in terms of like on Lashley's end and the schematic end, of going from a guy like De'Arik King to the following season, it possibly being N'Kozy Perry or Tyler Van Dyke starting for us?
No, because you saw his efficacy go up with Bouchel. And Bouchel, listen, no offense to him. He came from Texas. He made his way, and he had a very effective season. But, like, we have guys on Miami's roster that are more talented. Like, I really wholeheartedly believe that. Like, I think N'Kozy Perry is a lot more talented than Shane Bouchel. He's got more of a live arm. He's a better runner. Bouchel wasn't that type of run threat. So if Lashley was able to reel off that style of offense, be one of a handful of teams that scored 40 points a game without a mobile threat quarterback. Now, with Bouchel, he was the opposite of a zone, you know, read capable. There was many times I watched him, you know, they would do that little zone read. Defensive ends not even worrying about Bouchel. They just abandoned it, and they went right after the halfback. He didn't keep teams honest at all. I know Miami for a fact has quarterbacks in the room that can keep teams honest in that capacity. And Tyler Van Dyke, I want to piggyback this off Lance Roffers, who, when I was at Insight, he said his shuttle time, and he's a sneaky athletic guy, his shuttle time mirrored Deshaun Watson's. So that was like, he is another guy. And I have it on good authority, too. Tyler just didn't run that much in high school because his offensive coordinator knew how much he meant, and the head coach knew how much he meant to the team. They didn't want him to run. They didn't want to potentially get him injured. So I think moving forward, if the ball was given to Tyler Van Dyke, I don't think we need to worry. He's not going to be De'Aaron King, mind you, but he's plenty capable. He's very much more capable than Michelle was, you know, running the ball from a quarterback perspective. So I think we're fine moving forward. But I get what you're saying, because Derek King's going to be this Ferrari with feet, and then everybody else on the roster and what he's put out offers to in 2021 doesn't seem to have that yet. We're in the middle of our State of the U, you know, 2021 quarterback breakdown series. But I'm telling you, I'm fine. I'm fine with Lashley. He's remember, that's why he's my number one pick. He can do more with less. So he'll adapt the offense. I'm very confident there.
So building off of that, you've broken down Miller Moss and Aaron McLaughlin so far. What can you tell us about those two dudes? So they're both 2021 guys that highly rated. We've sent them offers. There seems to be mutual interest there. What can you tell us about them as recruits?
I like them. I mean, they're worthy of the praise. You know, obviously the question, and I'll field it again right now, was out of the two, who would you take? And even though Miller Moss is the higher rated recruit by the 24/7 composite, and by the way, I always look at that last. I always like to just kind of look at it with my own perspective, see where I would be, and then go back. So when it was done, I was actually a little surprised that Miller Moss was rated as high as he was over McLaughlin, because I really, really liked McLaughlin's game. And it was play one. I'll start there. 2021, Aaron McLaughlin, obviously he's from Dublin High School in Georgia. I mean, this dude, and to all the quarterbacks, listen, put your best highlight like clip first. Just always do it. And he got the message. Because when he rolls opposite hand and just flicks one 45 or 55 yards in the air, and the trajectory wasn't this high over the top, this is, you know, all the arm I have, this is everything. No, man, it was like a Jordan-esque poster halfway up the middle. He's like got his leg extended. He flicks the ball 55, and I'm like, this dude is for real. So immaculate touch. He's obviously been coached up really well. His footwork is, you know, at the high school level, it is really good. And I don't know, maybe I'm partial, and that's why I like McLaughlin so much, because Georgia quarterbacks right now are killing it. That area, I mean, you have some world-renowned quarterback coaches such as Quincy Avery out of the Georgia area, and it's just branching off from there. And you can't – I mean, college last – in the playoffs last year, boys – you had two Georgia boys, right? You had two guys from the state of Georgia when you had Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence from Georgia High School Products. So they seem to be the cream of the crop. I've seen them on film. They just have this polish to them that other parts of the country don't have. And then when I looked at it like a head-to-head battle with Miller Moss, I like Moss's game a lot, but I didn't see that play that Aaron McLaughlin was able to go ahead and put out his junior year from the Miller Moss side. I didn't see it. Is he capable? Yeah. Is he damn good? Oh, absolutely. Does he have an arm? Does he have multiple trajectories? Good. But when it's all said and done with, I like McLaughlin a little bit more than Miller Moss. And but I don't think you could go wrong in either direction there.
Okay. Okay. And, you know, Ro, I want to get back to the offensive line, because obviously that has been – that was a huge issue last year, you know, 127th in sacks allowed. How do you think Lashley's offense will benefit this offensive line going forward?
I think this – the national average for holding on to the ball, like once the play was snapped, was like 2.5 seconds. He was well under that. And then you have Miami last year, and I don't think it's a surprise and should shock anyone. It is well over that. This offense is really – and remember, he does less with more. SMU's offensive line was not better than Miami's last year. I'll repeat it again. SMU's offensive line was not better than Miami's. I mean, I would at least get Miami and all their falters and efforts last year to you know, they'll get some pancake blocks. They'll look really, really good at times. They'll do exactly what you ask them to do. I just think that Eno's put him in such a difficult position with some of the play action series that he would tend to do, and where he would put the quarterbacks in relation to their drops and what he was, you know, we'd get split leveled so many times with Enos, meaning like, hey, you got your left tackle doing like a vertical drop step, your right left guard is doing like a, you know, a 45 drive step. And they're like, you know, you get, they're so susceptible to stunts. And then I put on a Rhett Lashley film that they're just, they're better taught. I mean, it's just, they're not getting split level. The ball's coming out quick. It's, and the fact that you use tempo is such an equalizer. The fact that you use space is such an equalizer. I go back to last year when I was like, there was multiple times where the person who was responsible for giving up a sack was your slot wide receiver. So let that sink in. When it's Mike Harley's fault, when the coaches acknowledge that it's Mike Harley's fault because he's so close to the line of scrimmage, at the end of the year, that sack total gets attributed to, and all eyes and bullseyes go on the offensive line. So you're not going to have that component. And when you're going a little bit more tempo, you leave the defense for more propensity to get ready, and they don't get as quite as exotic. You know, those third down exotic plays and the blitzes that confuse Miami, that split level, I think it's going to disappear. I will promise Miami fans, there is no way, no way, okay? I'll be bold here. There's no way that Miami has as many sacks as they had a year ago. And I don't even think it's going to be close. I really, really don't. Just by the stylistic of offense, the tempo, and the fact that you're gonna negate some of these, you know, nuances that hurt us last year, it's just not going to be there when you use the space and the tempo.
Wow. That's beautiful to hear. And so let me ask you this last question, Ro. You wrote an article a few weeks ago on State of the U, why this offseason is different from last season, or what the differences are. Can you kind of break that down and explain to Canes fans listening what you think the difference is between this offseason and last offseason?
Yeah, I kind of took it in parts, right? I mean, the first thing was, is like last year, you know, we got a quarterback too, and everybody was, you know, in, you know, Tate Martell, yeah. And a lot of people picked him to be the starter. And then obviously that didn't work out. I see, but here, and I think this is why I was trying to make the point. Yes, we did get another transfer quarterback. What's different from this year to last year? Well, just on the quarterbacks alone, this quarterback had 50 touchdowns at the high level in college football, right? Tate Martell was a relatively unknown. He came a byproduct of really being, you know, off a show off Netflix, and he was very, very fortunate in high school, but he really didn't have those numbers to back it up in college. He was essentially a question mark coming in, and obviously that question mark got answered at the end of this year because he really didn't pay any dividends for us from the quarterback position. And then you turn around and yes, we got Hill from Virginia Tech. Oh wow, we've already heard this. But I'm like, you realize that no slander is ever going to go towards the French Quarter. And by the French Quarter, I mean Gregory Rousseau, right? Everybody understands. Now you have Roche, and Roche by Pro Football Focus is actually rated higher than Rousseau. So it's not like Hill, like the way that Hill performed. If you're rated higher than Gregory Rousseau, you're going to be a monster. I mean, it's just – so it's a different echelon defensive end. It's a different echelon quarterback that's coming in that's proven. They're both proven. And now the final piece that I was like, what makes it different? Yeah, we were high and mighty. We heard Spread Coast with Dan Enos. And I had to humble. I got humbled a little bit. And this year I refused. I got humbled with Dan Enos because I took too much of what happened at Alabama and Alabama's success the year before. Yeah. And I looked at a lot of that Alabama film. And I looked at Arkansas, too. And I was kind of hoping it was going to mirror more of that Alabama style. I even wrote back then when I wrote an article for another site, I wrote that I'm concerned with the tempo that it operates because it operated with a lot more tempo at Alabama this year. And when Enos had problems with tempo in Arkansas, his final year, the offense didn't look nowhere near as good as it did that Alabama season from the year before. So with Lashley, I'm like, I'm sticking current. I'm sticking current because I'm going to stick current because it's the most accurate picture of what he did. I know he's going to add a little bit more components. We touched on in a previous question with De'Aaron King because he's so much of an elite runner. You have to do that. But I'm telling you right now, boys, it's a different game because now you're hearing everybody saying this is the offense Miami's needed to go to for about 10 years. You know, this is something that I've cried for from the rooftops, and that's why it's different for me. So to the summarization of parts, because the quarterback is proven, the defensive end is proven, and this offensive coordinator, he's bringing in the system that Miami needs. And that's why I think this offseason is different, even though you saw similar moves from the year before.
Love it, man.
Yeah.
Hey, so before we let you go, I also wanted to ask you one more question, if that's okay. I listened to the Jimmy Murphy Orange Bowl Boys podcast. I'm sure almost all of our listeners did too. That was a fantastic episode. So first, I want to give you big ups on that. Next, I want to ask you, what were your favorite takeaways from talking to Jimmy Murphy? I mean, like you said, he was very candid. I mean, the dude should be a motivational speaker. He got me hyped. but I want to know what your biggest takeaways were.
Well, first, my biggest takeaway was actually meeting him, and this is no offense to Jimmy. I just didn't realize Jimmy was that small. What makes that interview so much better is the fact that, and I think you saw the picture circulate, and I'm always like closest to the camera, and I don't know why I need to be further from the camera because I literally look like I'm Shaquille O'Neal to Jimmy Murphy. And like I'm telling you, there's like offensive linemen on our team that would do the same kind of phenomenon to me, you know. So and just he was so infectious. It was his personality was the same way that I've watched him for years, just running on special teams. There was no that is an individual. They're rare to find where they don't have first, second, and third and fourth gear. They're zero to fifth. That's it. They don't know anything in between. And I was just blown away by, he's like, I'm like, Jimmy, why you get the news? Why did you want to like just jump out of the Uber? He's like, I felt trapped. I had to get out. I had to just scream. I had to just run. There you go. You don't have a guy who understands he's in a car in the middle of Miami traffic about to get doused. This guy just wants to jump out and do cartwheels and backflips. And you just, it was one of those things when my son's a little bit older and he can appreciate like the mental game as he's, you know, he's a little kid and my daughter, I want him to listen to that. I'm like, listen, you don't know who this is. He'll be older. I'm like, but he's just such a remarkable perseverance and testimony of working hard, literally the road less traveled. He stuck to it. He had a dream. He had a passion. And I will say, man, we pissed them off when we called him Rudy. Toast literally left that on the on the cutting room floor, but he pissed them off. And like, it kind of took us all like off guard. And later on, he's like, and I got it. I really did. I got why he was so upset because he was so much better than Rudy. I mean, this was a guy, let's be honest, the coaches counted on him. They depended on him. This wasn't like, hey, the game's close. We have to punt the ball away. Let's hide Jimmy Murphy. No, Jimmy Murphy was your gunner, and he was the first person down there, and he was making tackles. Like, let's put him on kickoff. This was a guy who earned his spot. I don't think anybody could debate that. He earned his spot. And this wasn't a Rudy situation where, you know what, the game's out of hand. Let's just throw him in some, you know, obscure position. Go, you know, just go be a deep. No, Jimmy was better, you know, and I think that's why he was maybe, and I'm not speaking for him here, but that was just my takeaway. I'm like, just Jimmy, just you were better, bro. You were a better story than Rudy was. Rudy just was sensationalized. And then to hear Jimmy Murphy say, you know what? Rudy was offsides, which is always an ongoing long joke that he was if you watch that film. So remarkable story of perseverance. I mean, I was happy to have watched him. He was a dismal season last year, ending at 6-7. But if there was going to be a sole bright spot, my personal opinion, it was Jimmy Murphy.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, you guys have had some great episodes and some great interviews. I think that one was my favorite. That was just awesome, man. So, Ro, thank you so much for coming on, man. Check out Roman's work on the Orange Bowl Boys and the State of the U. Very happy you've joined me and Cam and the guys at State of the U. So, Ro, we'll have to have you on again. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you very much, boys. Marsh, take care. Take care, guys. And, yeah, man, you guys are killing it. Man, I'm proud of you, Marsh. You're doing well, and I'm happy to be part of the team, man.
Yep. Thanks, Ro.
All right. Take care, boys.
Yeah.
What a good guy.
All right. Yeah, dude. That's awesome.
Ro is honestly, I know I say this after every guy we interview. Ro's awesome. I love Ro. I love the Orange Bowl Boys. I could talk football with him for like all day.
Dude, I just want to know as much about football as he does when I grow up.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, I watch his film breakdowns and I'm like, okay, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? Yeah. And
like, they don't have that on Madden.
Yeah. Wait, I don't see this on freshman level of NCAA.
I don't know, right?
Yeah, that was, big thanks to him. And, that was just fun. It was just good times.
Yeah, that was good stuff, man.
And so here in a little bit, we'll be having on another guest. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think, let's see. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with LaVon Ponder in just a moment.
Let's do it.
Cool. All right, so we're back. We quick bathroom break, and I had to load up on Mountain Dew. I'm sure Marsh is getting some candy over there.
Oh my gosh, I hell yeah, I did.
What candy you got tonight, Marsh?
I have some Haribo Twin Snakes.
Dude, I love those, actually. I'm not a big candy guy, but those are good.
Bro, I could eat them, like, for my meals. Like, they are so freaking good, man. Like, I need to stop, though, because I know we have a guest coming on, but I got to stop because I got to freaking get, like, toned and everything because I want to go to the spring game and I want to look good, you know?
Yeah, dude. You got to wear the tank top, you know, and got to have the triceps.
I already ordered my Adidas sleeveless shirt for the spring game. I'm going to be showing off.
Dude, I'm wearing my, did you see that video of me on Twitter where I was shotgunning that rock star in that horrible Hawaiian shirt and the straw hat?
What? No.
I'm going to send that to you, but that's what I'm wearing to any spring ball stuff that I go to, and definitely every tailgate.
Yes, man.
There's a side of Jordan that not a lot of people get to see that didn't know me in college, so. I don't know if Kane's fame is ready for it, man. It's a whole different intensity.
I'm excited, man. I am so excited. So who do we got coming on?
Okay, so we got LaVon Ponder coming on. I'm about to dial him up right now, and I'll introduce him then. LaVon, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
What's going on?
Thanks for coming on, LaVon.
No problem.
So we got LaVon Ponder here. He played some DB for the Miami Hurricanes from 2004 was when he enrolled, and then was a senior in 2008. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, welcome on, man. We're happy to have you, and thanks. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Well, so LaVon, let's get right into it, man. You know, I'm gonna start off by asking you a softball question. So you were at Miami during some pretty entertaining years. You know, you had a lot of stuff going on in the program, things like that. What was your most memorable win as a Hurricane, and then what was your most, I'd say, devastating loss as a Hurricane?
Most memorable win had to be 2005 versus Virginia Tech.
Yeah. You know,
the game, ranked 3, they came in ranked 5th, and it was just a big, big time game. Saturday night in Blacksburg, Marcus Vick, the Hokies. You know, it was a big game. That was probably the most memorable game. And then on the flip side, the one that makes me sad is the final loss to Virginia in the Orange Bowl. That game there, I just wish I could take it back and, you know, do it all over again.
LaVon,
I was at that game at the Orange Bowl as a seventh grader, and that was pretty devastating. But I will also say I do remember that Virginia Tech game in 05 very well. I mean, they came in, they were undefeated if I'm not mistaken, and I remember you guys you had lost the opening game to Florida State, but then you kind of went on a roll, and then you go into Blacksburg and you win 27-7. The defense scored a touchdown that night, and Kyle Wright did his thing. And yeah, that was that was definitely one of the more memorable games I remember as a Hurricane fan. That good choice. That's a good choice.
All right, so I got a question for you. So you were on the team for the FIU brawl game, correct?
Yeah.
So, and I believe you got a lot of playing time in that game.
Yeah, I did. I had an interception, matter of fact, that game.
Awesome. Would you mind sharing, like, would you give us some reflections on that game? Like, I mean, obviously that's kind of the biggest thing that happened that year, you know? Like, take us through what happened. Were you on the field when the brawl started?
I was on the sideline because we had just scored a touchdown, and it was, the build-up for that started during the beginning of the week. They were talking, same as how it was this year, when FIU was saying that we're University of Carr Gables. They think that we're their little brother and everything like that, and that just continued the whole week. And then when game time rolled in, it was they were like, we're not the underdogs, we're the big dogs, so they wanted to come at us the whole game. And then, I guess it's the safety, Chris, I forgot his name, but Chris Smith, that's his name. He had been talking the whole week, and he was saying he was going to fight somebody if he got a chance to, and that's what he did.
All right.
And kind of like, because I remember, I was a season ticket holder, so I was in the stands there, and I think it was you guys took the opening drive of the third quarter, went down and scored. It's 14-0, and they attacked our poor kicker. Is that right?
It was actually the holder, Matt Pirelli.
Okay.
They attacked him. He was, he had just held the kick, and it went through, and all I see was somebody get suplexed. I was like, what's going on? And they slammed him, and then the brawl ensued. Man, it was what made us really want to battle it out was 2005, if you remember. We played LSU in the Peach Bowl, and it was a brawl after that game in the tournament. And some people said we lost that fight. So the next fight that we did have, we want to come out and show somebody that we want, you know, nobody to be played with.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, man. I that was one of the crazier scenes I've ever seen in sports. I mean, that was, I remember, I think it was it Anthony Ponder that was that kind of that got you know, swinging the helmet.
Oh, it was Anthony Reddick. Yeah.
Anthony Reddick. Yeah. And it was just a crazy scene there at the Orange Bowl. And and I wanted to ask you this because 2006 and 2007 were kind of, I mean, you were there. I mean, there were struggles of a year. In your opinion, what season was more frustrating? 2006 with Larry Coker, and I'm not blaming the head coaches or anything like that, but what season, I mean, when you look back at 2006 and 2007, what goes through your mind?
Disappointment, because 2006, to be honest, 2006, I thought we had our better team. We had a bunch of freshmen who had played that were you know, had played during my time, like 2004, 2005, that were juniors and sophomores that were ready to play. And we had some older guys like Brandon Merriweather, Kareem Brown, Baraka Atkins. We had guys like that who were, you know, were potential NFL players on that team that we thought, you know, we were going to run through the ACC. So that 2006 had to be the most disappointing. 2007, I understand we had new coaching staff, new head coach, new everything. So it was, you know, it was a learning time.
Absolutely. And I kind of wanted to piggyback off that because, I mean, you know, going into that 2006 season, I mean, you guys really were filled with talent. You had Greg Olsen, Brandon Merriweather, Clay Campbell, Kenny Phillips, you know. And, you know, we all had high expectations. As a defensive back, what was that, you know, what were practices like? What were the meeting rooms like with Brandon Merriweather and Kenny Phillips and all that talent?
Man, it was – we were coaching us. We could coach ourselves, really. It was, everybody knew the defense, knew what was going on, knew the checks, knew everything. You know, we would watch film together as a defensive unit, and we knew what was going on. It just never translated onto the field that year. You had two first rounders I could call out the guys that played in the NFL in that room. You had Bruce Johnson, who picked off. Matter of fact, Bruce Johnson had the first pick in the Cowboys' new stadium against Tony Romo. We had Kenny Phillips, first rounder. Brandon Merriweather, first rounder. We had Lynn Sharp played on that team. He was played in the NFL for a while. We had guys who were, you know, starters in the NFL in that meeting room at the time.
So I want to ask you concerning all this. I mean, so you were there 2004 to 2008. 2004 were really still like considered to be part of that dynasty, right? From 2000 to 2004 is usually what people say when we were so dominant. And then you ended your career like right in the heart of some really difficult times for the Miami football team.
Yeah.
Like what sense was it like being in the locker room? Like what changed culturally? Can you kind of put that into words so we can understand better as fans that happened?
I would want to say it was a lot of accountability. You know, we had, when I first came in, guys had to cut their hair bald. If you had dreads, if you had low cut or whatever, you had to cut your hair bald head for your freshman picture. When it came in, my 2007, 2008, guys who were freshmen coming in didn't have that. They didn't have to cut their hair. They were just coming in and they were being promised spots on the starting team. So it was like a accountability, and guys didn't want to, you know, how they say it, grow their roots.
Okay.
Okay. And when you came in as a freshman in 2004, I know you redshirted that year, but when you came in, I mean, there were still – the amount of talent that was on that team is incredible. – Yep. Who were some of the bigger name guys that kind of stood out to you when you came in as a freshman?
It was Antrell Roe. You know, that's the guy who I sat by when I first team meeting. He brought me up there and set me next to him. That's the guy I sat by the whole year. Antrell Roe. We had the third all time leading rusher in the NFL right now, Frank Gore. He was there. that's amazing, man. To play with a guy like that. You had guys like Santonio Thomas. You had you know, just different names, just older guys who were, you know, ready and who had played with guys like Ed Reed and Sean Taylor and all those other guys. And They were just, you know, was just feeding us everything that they knew.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you still keep in contact with some of your former teammates when you were a Hurricane?
Reggie Youngblood I talked to, Deron Thomas. You know, guys like that. I talk to those guys there all the time.
That's awesome. So I looked a little into your personal career. The first play that jumped out, I didn't realize that this was you until we were talking about you coming on the pod, but one of my all-time favorite, like, plays that I saw on TV, you know, the Hurricanes defense was the strip and fumble recovery that you had against BC in 2007.
It was funny because I had been working on those stripping the ball all year long, and then visualized stripping the ball, and then the time just came up to where it was the tight end caught it and he turned up field. And he just looked like he was carrying it loose. And I just stripped out. And the ref didn't even know I had took the ball until I fell out of bounds. He was like, hold on, somebody else has the ball. And he pointed pointed our way. I was like, yes, I had a ball.
Yeah, I remember watching that game and, you know, in my front room of my house. And I was so hyped because I hated BC. I still hate BC. I still hate Ryan. And, oh, man, I love that play. That was, unfortunately, like, one of the more exciting parts of that game for Miami. But
That one in the strip, the strip that Colin McCarthy had, and the ball rolled up into my arm. So I had two fumble recoveries that game. Yeah. And the biggest play I missed was Matt Ryan threw a in route. And I turned with the receiver, and as soon as I turned around, the ball hit me in my face mask and popped up. I was like, oh, my goodness, I had a chance to pick off Matt Ryan.
Yeah. Number
one pick. I had a chance to pick him off. But, hey, you know, some things happen.
Yeah. And then another play that stuck out to me, you had I think it was 37 yards, 30-something yard touchdown pass to Sam Shields.
Yeah.
Versus UNC in 2006.
Uh-huh.
That was your only play on offense, wasn't it?
Yep, my only play on offense. And that came about because it was a Thursday practice, and Thursday practices were usually lighter practices. So the quarterbacks would go out a little early, you know, start throwing. And we were throwing the ball cross field, so from sideline to sideline. And they were throwing it. And I was like, let me get the ball. Let me see. And I threw it, you know, sideline to sideline. And then Coach Olsen walked out. He was like, man, you can throw the ball? I was like, yeah, I can throw the ball a little bit. He was like, all right, I got you. So 2 weeks later, he came and called me over to the officer's field. I'm like, what's going on? He was like, here, we're going to run this play right here. You're just going to line up in the slot. Greg's going to motion over. He's going to block in front of you. We're just going to step back and throw it. And he was like, if Sam's not open, look backside for Lance Leggett. He said, look backside for Lance Leggett. He should be open. So when the play happened against North Carolina, originally, I was looking backside for Lance because I didn't think Sam would be open. And when I heard the crowd say, and I looked back for Sam. I was like, oh, he's wide open. And I was like, don't overthrow him. Don't underthrow him. Just put it on him. It was a pretty good throw. And then every so after that, Sebastian Ivins would, you know, copy me and do the stance how I was throwing when I threw the ball. And It was
just
a whole big old fun ordeal.
Yeah, I remember that play. I remember it was about 110 degrees in the Orange Bowl that day.
It was hot.
It was so hot. Bloody hot that day. I got a question. You were around UM. I mean, your first year, you know, you probably watched on the sidelines, but your rivalry games against Florida State, you know, 04 was when Frank Gore rushed it in for the win. 05 was when Monroe dropped the snap for the field goal. 07 was when, you know, Colin McCarthy had that late touchdown. You were involved in some great Miami-Florida State games. What does that rivalry mean to you? And obviously, it was a lot bigger back then because it was an ordeal that, you know, it you know, everyone across the country knew what Miami Florida State meant. What does that rivalry mean to you?
You mean FS who?
Yeah.
yeah. them guys, the school next to FAMU in Tallahassee. That school. it was big. As a kid growing up in Miami, playing Ultimates on those Saturdays when Miami and Florida State were playing, people had those portable TVs watching Miami, Florida State. You know, and it was just such a big game that's going to be played. Then you had the wide rights, the wide lefts, the big hits by Sean Taylor in the, up there in Tallahassee, the hit down here by Sean. It was a fun rivalry that I wish I could go back and play again a couple more times.
It's awesome, man. I mean, you'd know just as good as anyone, you know, 5 years being around the program. That's, man, I just love Miami football, I guess. But so I wanted to kind of gauge your temperature on how the program's going right now. I mean, what thoughts do you have for the state of the program as it is right now?
I like the new moves they made. I know Rhett Lashley. You know, that guy, I watched him up here at SMU, and he turned that program around on the offseason. And man, they were scoring points all over the place. And then to pick up Derek King, another guy from up here in Texas that I got a chance to watch a lot at Houston. Man, the offense looks like it's ready to be primed and ready to go. And then on the defensive end, to return a guy like Zach McLeod to your linebacking core, to a young core, to get them, you know, some experience back there, to have the experience that you got back there in the secondary. Oh man, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a fun season. I just can't wait till the spring, you know, to see those guys go and compete with each other and see what comes up out of that.
Yeah. I mean, after last year, we are in need of something good. And I mean, because you saw University of Miami and you were around that program when it was one of the elite programs in the country. Yeah. What do you think needs to be done? What do you think this program is missing that we have been without for, you know, 15 years?
Just some dogs on the field, man. It was a time when you talk about Miami, you were like, man, which guy's gonna be the next first rounder? You know, had 8 straight years of first rounders at one time? And yeah, you're like, man, who's the next first rounder? Now you got guys like, oh, maybe you go last, maybe you go to the third day, maybe he won't get drafted. But back then you had guys that were, you know, big time players, man. Every time you talked about or turned on Miami, there was somebody that was big time playing for them. You just miss those guys that are ready to play football, that just want to play football. Not, I can kind of see that in this 2020 class, guys that just want to play football.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's kind of what Manny said was, you know, he said that we got this disease, as he called it, of kind of entitlement and kids are interested in more than just winning football games. They're kind of, you know, a little too high on their own horse. But he said that this 2020 class is full of dogs, like you said, and you know, just guys that care about having the U on their helmet. You know, I don't know. I hope he's right.
Yeah, because it's so different, man. I remember when we first got into the fall, you couldn't get the U on your helmet. Everybody walked out with white plain helmets. Just white plain helmets, white plain face masks. That's it. The first time you got the U on your helmet is when you dressed up for the game. And if you didn't dress for a game, you didn't get the U the whole year. Put it that way. So
interesting. I didn't know that.
It was something you had to earn. Now it's just like, here, slap the U on your helmet and let's go. It was something you had to earn.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so I wanted to double back to something you said earlier. You mentioned that everyone had to, like, you know, shave their head when they were a freshman. Like, what did that symbolize? Because, you know, I mean, did that build unity? Did it build humility? Like, what did it mean having to do that?
It was done during before fall camp. So that way, when school came back in, your hair hadn't grew back, or, you know, you had lights cut or whatever. It was done before fall camp. It was only for you, for the guys, you know, in the locker room. So it wasn't even done for humility, because it was really nobody around campus to know that you had a bald head at the time. So you know, it built a lot of camaraderie with the guys. You know, you had older guys who would shave your head, but like when they shaved your head, they made sure the guy who shaved your head wanted to look out for you also.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, thanks for coming on, man. I think that's all the questions we got for now.
Yeah, thank you so much, LaVon. I mean, and thank you for giving kind of shedding some light into what it was like back in the day to be a Miami Hurricane. Because I feel like, man, I feel like what you just explained has been kind of lost throughout the last decade and a little bit more. Just what that U means, man, because I mean, as a kid growing up in South Florida, it really meant a lot, and it meant, I think, a little bit something more to you know what it means right now. So we just thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us, man.
Thank you, no problem, man. I'll leave y'all with one thing, man. I just remember pulling up to the OB Saturday night, Florida State, and the stadium was already rocking. And nobody's even on the field yet.
There was no place like the OB.
No place like it.
I feel bad for the kids growing up now, and whoever.
Marsh, you there?
Especially a game like Florida State or Florida or even Virginia Tech, man. When that stadium got rocking, there was nothing like
it. I remember my first game as a recruit was the Florida game in 2003.
Yep. Oh,
the comeback game, man. The Devin Hester kick return for a touchdown. Oh man, the
stadium. I've never heard a stadium louder than I was. I think I was in like the upper deck or something, but I was there and. When Hester returned that kick, and then when Kevin Beard took a long pass, like down to one, you literally felt the ground was moving, man. Ooh. And then when Sean Taylor got a pick to win the game, it was Hard Rock Stadium gets loud, but that is another kind of loud that you can't even describe. You gave me goosebumps, man.
Times when they had to put the stands in the back of the open end zone to fit everybody. Oh man, it's just you just miss those times like that, man. That when Miami was Miami, man. But I hope they can get back to that, man.
I hope, man. Hey, so real last thing, do you want to give us a prediction on the record this year, or do you want to stay away from that?
13-0 national championship.
Let's go! Oh man, I love it. That's
green and orange all the way, man.
Dude, I love it, bro. I wish we had a, you know, 85 guys with that mentality. Yeah, so
yeah. That's how it's got to be. But hey, it's gonna be some good games. Hey, I can't wait.
All right, thanks for coming on, LaVon. I'm sure we'll have you on again sometime. So. All the best, man. I hope things are going well for you, and take care of yourself.
All right, guys. Four's up, man.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, brother.
Bye. Right. Oh, that was awesome, dude.
That was cool. That just brought me back, man. That just brought me back to a kid. You know, I'm so, like, Jordan, I know this is going to sound so mean, but, like, I'm so sorry you could never go to a game in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah,
well. I know that sounds like like a douche thing to say of me, but like, it's kind of like if you were a kid like in Utah growing up and you went to a game in the Delta Center when Stockton and Malone were there, or I mean you were a Yankee fan growing up in New York and you went to the old Yankee Stadium when they were winning championships. It was just. Hard Rock Stadium is cool. It's dope. You know, I've been there for some pretty loud games myself. But man, that Orange Bowl when in the troughs, when you're going to the bathroom and there's freaking troughs there. And
I mean, you're eating street vending food and you don't know really what the hell you're eating, but it was just
good to me, man. I'm always down for some mystery street food.
when they're or even in the Orange Bowl, I mean, man, and the tailgates, and there's just something special going to a Miami Florida State game in the Orange Bowl, pulling up to the tailgate lot, and I just hope that we can get back to that place and we can have Hard Rock Stadium become that environment that it's shown that it can be, in 2017 or 2018 when we played FSU, we know it can be a loud, intimidating place. I just want us to be good.
My biggest fear though is the optimist in me says that, you know, that will happen again. But my biggest fear is that we're going to get to a point where nobody remembers it, at least kids, you know, because, I mean, you're what, like, you're 25, right? 24, 25?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you're probably one of the younger dudes that has memories like that.
Yeah. I mean, because the last game in the Orange Bowl was when I was in seventh grade. And so, what's that, like 13 years old? And so, yeah, man, I mean, there's not many kids younger than me who went to the Orange Bowl that have those memories.
Yeah, and so, but, I mean,
all those games that you asked LaVon about, like the UNC game where he threw a touchdown, the FIU game, the last game in the Orange Bowl, I mean, I was at all of those games, and I remember them vividly.
And I'm afraid of the time when these high school kids have no idea about that stuff, you know? Like, how can we get back to that level if people don't even know what it is?
That's why 2020, it has to happen. Like, it has to. Like,
yeah.
Just talking to Ro earlier, like, he's like, I'm optimist again. Like, I'm optimistic. Like, 11 days till spring camp, man. Like, it's.
Oh, I mean, trust me. I mean, I'm a very bipolar Canes fan. You know, I'm here 3 weeks ago saying that we're going to go 10-2. And then, you know, blog today about how the program has been trash for 15 years. You know, like, I'm going to get up for it again, man. But I just, oh, man, it's like dating someone that's just. Disappointed you 10 times over and you keep going back to him. You know what I mean?
10 times, more like 20 times.
Right.
I mean,
your car, you know, robbed your parents, burnt down your apartment, you know, and you keep going back.
They're like that girl that is just that teases you and texts you saying that she likes you and you think you're gonna date, and then she goes and all hell breaks loose.
Yep. What I'm saying, man, I have at least one of those in my past, and that hurts a lot less than being a Miami fan.
Being a Miami fan, like, has made me, like, into the grumpy person that I am. Like,
yeah,
they have given me some great moments, but, man, 2019 was enough to write a horror story about.
Oh, geez, man. So I kind of started up a blog thing today, you know, just for thoughts that are longer than Twitter, you know, stuff that doesn't get on the pod. One of the thoughts that I had was like mental weakness on our team being a problem for so long. And I kind of narrowed it to three categories. One of them is not being able to win close games, losing to teams that we should beat easily, and then also having one loss turn into losing streaks, right? So just looking at those first two, the not being able to close out close games, and then also, you know, not being able to get up for teams that are like cupcakes, dude, that's all seven losses. Like, if you think about it, all seven losses of last season fit into those two categories.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, so sad, man.
I know. I mean, Florida, Virginia Tech, Oh man, who else? So Florida, Virginia Tech, UNC, very easily could have won any of those games, and we just did not have the, I don't know, the testicular fortitude or the mental fortitude. You know what I mean? We just didn't have it, dude. We didn't have it. Dude. And then Duke, Georgia Tech, Louisiana Tech, and FIU is just going through the motions, you know, thinking, oh, I'm at Miami, I'll win this game. And then, you know, staying out past curfew, and I'm going to start slandering players again. And then you get embarrassed, dude. You get freaking embarrassed by FIU and Louisiana Tech.
You're, like, trying to, like, get my anger up and, like, make me go on a rant right now. Like,
I'm going to kick a hole in the door, Marsh.
Bro, I've almost put last season behind me, but you are about to make me go back to a dark place.
Yeah.
When I tell you what, that day that we lost to Louisiana Tech, that was a dark place. day we lost to Virginia Tech, I was just sitting. Everyone has seen that picture of me at the game after we lost to Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Depressed Marsh. Like, that is the reality of my life as a Hurricanes fan. I will always support the Canes no matter what. I love them with all my heart. I love them more than I should. They haven't like come on, like, you meet me halfway for God's sake. But
I could feel myself getting angry. I was on like a little weekend trip with my girlfriend over the FIU game, and I just remember.
Nice brag.
Oh, well, it's just in a friend's cabin, but like, oh my gosh, man, it ruined our weekend. She was threatening that I might have to stop watching football after that one. So
I swear, like, that's one of the reasons why I'm single, is because, like, women have seen me, like, they see me watch football and see the freaking maniac I become, and I'm obsessed. I'm like Jimmy. Have you seen Fever Pitch?
Yeah.
That's like me. I'm Jimmy Fallon with the Red Sox in that movie. And I'm just waiting for my Drew Barrymore to come along.
Yeah, dude. I mean, not to make light of a sensitive subject, but I'm like, dude, I mean, the figurative term of suicidal, man. Like, I just.
As a sports fan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In a sports fan sense. You know what I mean? I just can't even, I don't even get so much angry anymore, as I just like shut down physically. I'm just like alone in my thoughts, you know?
Right. When we lost to Georgia Tech, I sat in my basement in a dark room and just did nothing for the next like 48 hours. After the Virginia Tech game, I'm back home in South Florida. Like, I'm home. Like, I should be happy. I'm on vacation. And I'm just like, I didn't have it in me to do anything that night. My friends literally dragged me to Fort Lauderdale that night to go have a good time. And I was just miserable the entire night because I kept saying to myself, well, how the hell did we, like, how did we lose?
Yep.
How? Like, come on! Like,
I know, man.
Okay, and also, I am sick and tired of PK. You know how we were talking about uniforms last time?
Yep.
I am so sick and tired of people telling me that they didn't like those green jerseys we wore that one year against North Carolina. I thought they're cool. I'm not asking for other people's opinions. Like, leave me alone.
I'm just going to start trolling you now.
Everyone can go to hell.
I'm going to start trolling you now. Marsh is actually a Notre Dame fan.
Okay, you know what? And I will say this, and this has gotten me a lot of flack. I am a rare Miami fan. I don't hate Notre Dame. Do you hate Notre Dame?
I mean, not really. I mean,
I don't have a reason to hate Notre Dame.
Yeah. I mean, not any more than any other teams you play regularly. You know, it's like, I don't dislike, I mean, the only teams that I like truly, truly hate that are Miami rivals is Ohio State, Florida State, and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I hate UNC.
I hate Georgia Tech. I don't hate Notre Dame. Like
I like UNC's basketball team. I don't love them. I like them.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
But I mean, although I will say, like the year that they had Marquise Williams and they beat us, ooh man, I was seething mad after that game. Like I hated North Carolina that year.
Oh, but like I mean, I have no reason. Like I wasn't there for Catholics versus convicts. I mean, okay, yeah. So get off of me, lay off of me. Like I don't hate. Like I can hate who I want as long as I love the Canes with all my heart and with the passion that I bring. That's okay. Okay, everyone can shut up. And if you allow me to freaking just vent for a second.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I can feel my blood pressure rising. I have no reason to hate Notre Dame. Like I into Notre, like my father took me to a Notre Dame game in Notre Dame when I was like in eighth grade or something like that, and it was the most magical place I have ever been in my life. Okay, so everyone can shut up.
Notre Dame, the Disneyland of football programs, right?
It's more magical than Disney. It really is. Like if I'm a sports fan and giving you like my bucket list of sports venues to visit, I would say not in any order. I would say Wrigley Field, and then I think Fenway Park's overrated, and then I would say Notre Dame. I would really say Notre Dame. It is the most. I can't even like you feel the spirit when you're there. You know, yeah. It's pretty. Like you see the Golden Dome and everything. And
oh man,
but I mean, like I hate Florida State. Hate them with all my heart. Like when I lived in Tallahassee and would look at that stupid stadium and look at that dumb campus, I would just get a burning pit in my stomach. But when I don't feel that against Notre Dame. So back to my original point, if I like their uniforms, let me be. Okay.
Gosh. I just had to get that off my chest.
Okay. I may or may not have to troll you a little bit.
Hey, yeah. I mean, I get it all the time from Kings fans. And it's okay.
At least I do it out of love, though, right? Some people just want to be boneheads.
Yeah, screw them.
I know. I'm.
Hey, are you going to the spring game?
I don't know, man. I mean, if you go, I'm going.
Is it April 11th? Is that confirmed?
I don't know. If you're going, I'm going to say it right now in front of a live audience. It's going to have a few hundred, maybe even thousands of listeners.
You never know.
If you go, I'm going, dude. Just got to let me stay at your place because I can't afford to get my own place down there.
Yeah, I think we can find a room for you.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's at April 11th at Traz Powell.
Ooh.
That's what I've heard. Those are rumors, but yeah. And then we got spring practice in 11 days. I think on Thursday we can do a little preview. Start previewing, yeah. And I know we got Doc.
We're gonna go get some Cuban food with Callie Arrudia, right?
Yeah, bro, yes. We have – you know what is going to be – fans, if you are listening to this episode, comment below – because Jordan's never been to South Florida. He's never been to Miami. Comment below. Give some suggestions of food places he has to check out. I mean, because I'm saying that you have to go to a place called Le Tub. It's a hamburger place in Hollywood, which is my hometown. You got to go to Flanagan's. You got to go to Shenanigans. You have so – you're going to be broke by the end of this trip because you're just going to be eating out so much.
And here's the thing. I love food, and I love diversity of food. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that, like, on Monday I'm eating Vietnamese food. On Tuesday I'm eating Mexican food. On Wednesday, I'm eating Greek food. You know what I mean? Like, I switch it up. I'm hitting a different culture's cuisine every single day. That's how I like it. And I love traveling. I love learning about new people, cultures, ways of life. And to me, like, food is my favorite way of doing that. So I am ready for everything that South Florida can throw at me.
Oh, ooh, 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 ooh. Yeah, it is you are in for a real treat. So yeah, if you're listening, comment below, tweet us any place that Jordan has to check out to go eat. So, I mean, that's all I got for today. I know we got a big show on Thursday too.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be pretty good. You know, we got a guest that's confirmed for it, but, you know, just in case anything happens, I won't get people too excited right now, but, yeah, it should be a good week, man. And I think we're going to do a mailbag.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll think of some questions. If you want to be featured on the show, we'll read, you know, your question and your name so you can hear that, get excited. And, yeah, so we'll drop a place for you to throw your questions on tomorrow or Thursday. So
yeah, and big thanks to Roman Kane and also LaVon Ponder for coming on the show tonight. And so that's all I got.
Yeah, I just want to give a quick plug for Ro because he didn't really, but everyone check out the Orange Bowl Boys podcast. I mean, I'm sure you guys listen to it, but especially that Jimmy Murphy episode that they just put out. Like, that is, I don't know, man, like, his attitude is infectious. Like, I had to take a long look in the mirror after that one and, like, ask myself if I was really trying as hard as I could at every single part of my life, you know?
The fact that some people actually slander Jimmy Murphy, like, it infuriates me because those are my favorite stories in sports.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Jimmy, he is someone I want on this podcast. Like, Jimmy is
– me too, man.
That, like, fired me up. It just made me inspired. Like, big shout-out to Jimmy Murphy.
Dude, I
mean, he just represents everything you would want, like in a football player. Like, his effort and everything, it's just – it's amazing. Like,
yeah,
go listen to the interview if you have not.
Yeah. I think the only people who would slander him are, you know, like – people that are envious, because I mean, that's what we all wanted, right? We pretty much everyone that is listening to this podcast wanted to play college football, right? Like, at least at some point in their life. I'd be lying if I said I didn't, you know?
I just didn't squat enough. I didn't do legs at all. So I could not have survived.
Yeah, but I'm sure when you were like 10, you were thinking to yourself, like, I'm gonna play college football, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the plan. That's
what everyone thinks, man. You know, like, I don't know. That made me regretful because I had some buddies that like made the scout team at Utah State when we were there. And, you know, I was trying to do that too. And I just didn't have that determination that, like, I had to be honest with myself when I heard Jimmy talking about it. I was just like, you know, like, that's on me. I can't make any excuses. I just didn't want it as bad as Jimmy did.
Yeah.
You know, so he's an impressive dude. I like you said, I'd really love to have him on here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, Jimmy, if you're listening or if anyone is listening, let's get Jimmy on.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if we're gonna speak things into existence, I want to get Mountain Dew, this new Mountain Dew Zero Sugar, to sponsor our podcast, so I get some free stuff.
Or maybe
drink like a Rebo can of that today.
yeah. Thanks. Hey, and big shout out to you, Jordan, for putting together a great show. So,
hey, dude, it's all you, brother. It really is. It's all you, man. No one would even tune in if your name wasn't on it. So thank you, Marsh.
That's not true. But yeah, guys, thank you everyone for the support, and we will see you guys on Thursday.
Hey, see you guys.
Go Canes!
Go Canes!